Why is it important to study both bleeding and pre-procedural patients in reverse AD?
We made a very important methodologic decision when we were designing reverse AD to include both groups. Those of you who've read the study carefully will remember that the hemorrhagic patients are in group A and the pre-procedural patients in group B. And we felt very strongly we should include both. I point that out because the ongoing Anexa suite of studies evaluating Adexinet Alpha for the patients taking anti-10As who need reversal is looking only at bleeding patients and not looking at pre-procedural patients. The fact is the NOACs, as has been discussed ad nauseum, are associated with a lower risk of major bleeding and a much lower risk of intracranial bleeding than warfarin. So to study only bleeding complications would have taken a lot longer to get this study done. It turns out that in the cohort of patients taking chronic oral anticoagulation, the vast majority of these are AFib patients. And AFib patients tend to be older, have often multiple comorbidities, and their need for an emergent intervention, whether it's percutaneous or surgical, is much higher than the average population. And that creates a lot of problems because given that one can't measure readily the anticoagulation intensity of dabigatran, surgeons are very skittish about doing procedures on these patients. So we felt it answered both a clinical and a demographic-based need to look at both groups in the same study.
Dr. Pollack, there's a question regarding the reverse AD study. Why was there no control group in this study?
Well, as you might imagine, we've been asked that a lot. Obviously, this is an open-label study, but you can have an open-label randomized study where you're looking at some comparison or a placebo arm to measure, in a comparative sense, the impact of your study drug. We considered doing that, but there were problems in terms of considering both the alternatives. We could not ethically do a placebo-controlled study of adariciximab given the overwhelming and overwhelmingly consistent positive impact we saw of the drug in the preclinical environment in young healthy volunteers and older volunteers with diminished renal function in traumatized animal studies. The impact of adariciximab on dabigatran-related anticoagulation was so immediate, so profound, that we couldn't in good faith randomize someone bleeding to death or with a head bleed or needing emergency surgery to placebo. So the idea of a placebo-controlled study simply wasn't feasible. A comparator control study would be a reasonable design. The problem is we don't have a good comparator. There's nothing that's been studied to be used in reversal of dabigatran that has been validated in any sort of systematic or scientific way. Prior to the market availability of Praxbind, I would have told you that in a pinch, you know, in a life-threatening situation, I probably would use four-factor PCC. But there's been no objective, well-designed study really looking at that. We just have case reports and in vitro studies. So we really didn't have a gold standard to which we could compare adariciximab. Those of you who are familiar with the four-factor PCC study that brought that drug to market in the U.S., there was a comparison with fresh frozen plasma. Again, that was in warfarin-treated patients, and in NOAC-treated patients, we have no well-done study that we could use as a basis for establishing an alternative to adariciximab for these patients. So we really thought about it. We considered it strongly. We would have loved to have had a control or a comparison arm, but there really wasn't anything we could put on the other side of the docket from adariciximab. And both the FDA and the EMA agreed with us and were comfortable with the concept of an open-label cohort study for potential approval of this drug.
Dr. Pollack, staying focused on the reverse AD trial, a question is, why in reverse AD did you use a laboratory test as a primary outcome as opposed to clinical endpoints?
So if you've read the New England Journal article, the interim analysis, you know that we had a lot of clinical endpoints reported. You'll see even more when the study is complete. But from a statistical standpoint, it really was not possible to power the study for those clinical endpoints. Adariciximab doesn't stop bleeding. It reverses anticoagulation. So you're looking at pleomorphic processes that cause bleeding in the first place. You know, there's a big difference between a spontaneous intracranial hemorrhage, a spontaneous gastrointestinal hemorrhage, and traumatic blood loss in a motor vehicle accident. We have all of those different mechanisms and many more on the group A side, the bleeding side. And then on the group B side, we've got patients who need their reversal so that they can go get an open joint washed out, who have acute appendicitis or acute cholecystitis and needed an operation right away. Patients who had an expanding AAA who needed an operation right away. These are such disparate and heterogeneous groups of patients that it really wasn't feasible to construct a consistent clinical endpoint that we could use within Group A and within Group B, or joining Group A and Group B together, that would make any sense. So instead, we took the laboratory endpoint of reversal of the anticoagulant, because that's what adariciximab does. It's not an antidote as much as it is a reversal agent. We found two studies, to our credit, not just one, but two studies, and those studies were performed on every blood draw, that we know correlate very well to dabigatran levels across a broad range of concentrations. In that way, we can provide consistent results, whether the patient's bleeding or pre-surgical, that is quantitative and sort of beyond reproach, as opposed to someone's assessment of whether or not bleeding has stopped. I realize it's not as sexy to report back numbers from a lab as opposed to vital status of patients or DCs of bloodshed, that sort of thing, but it really is not reasonable across such a broad assortment of eligible patients. So we went with the more quantitative and consistent endpoint.
Thank you. I really believe that your comment regarding adariciximab as reversing dabigatran rather than stopping bleeding is a very important point to keep in mind. A participant has asked, why do you think the 90-day mortality in reverse AD was so high?
Well, there's a very simple answer to that, and I don't wish to sound glib, but it's because the patients were so doggone sick. These were really sick patients. I'll remind you that in reverse AD, we really have no exclusion criteria in terms of severity of illness or expected lifespan after treatment. These are really, really sick patients. We had 18 patients out of the first 90 die within the 90-day monitoring period, 9 from each group, 9 bleeders and 9 pre-procedural patients. And we had 9 early deaths and 9 late deaths. The early deaths were associated with what brought them into the hospital. Sometimes reversing anticoagulation is not enough to save a life. And obviously that's not infrequently the case in patients with spontaneous intracranial bleeds. The late deaths were uniformly attributable to the underlying disease state. So if the patient had underlying COPD and heart failure and also happened to have AFib, the cause of death was unrelated to the reversal incident in those late deaths, and in fact was related to the underlying pathology. Just as a reminder to put this all in perspective, we have identified zero clinically significant adverse effects attributable to the use of adariciximab, nothing drug-related. So when you've got people with significant underlying disease who then come in with a truly emergent reason to have their anticoagulation reversed, you're almost by definition dealing with a really sick group of patients, and we see that reflected in our data.
Dr. Pollack, thank you very much for your time today. We greatly appreciate your insights and the knowledge you've been able to share with us regarding adariciximab and particularly the reverse AD study. Just as a reminder to our participants, if you have additional questions that you would like to pose to Dr. Pollack, please send those to info@medcomcall.com, info@medcomcol.com, and we'll make sure to have Dr. Pollack address those as well. Thank you very much for your time. We greatly appreciate your interest and look forward to your feedback. Thank you.